Perhaps the most important characteristic about being human is the gift of transcendence. What I mean by that is that we have the ability to look beyond, to reach beyond the five senses that we perceive, because we know somehow deep down that we're destined for something more, that we are never going to be satisfied with anything finite, because we are created in the image of the infinite God, and we have that capacity for infinity within us. Every religion, in one way or another, touches onto that basic human truth. But if you look through the stories in the Bible and the liturgy and the traditions of the church, you find that everywhere. And we have some good examples of that in our readings today. The Bible has numerous call stories, vocation stories, calls of prophets, calls of disciples, calls of apostles. And quite often, the Bible portrays those in rather radical, unrealistic ways. And one of my favorites is this one from the first reading today. Elisha is plowing with 12 yoke of oxen. That's 24 oxen. Who did that? Was that a 36-foot plow that he was, pulling? It just doesn't make any sense. And then he slaughters 24 oxen and uses the plowing equipment to boil their flesh. That just didn't happen. But the author is trying to exaggerate the story to show how he made a radical shift in his attitude, in his life. And then from then on, he followed Elijah, whose successor he became. So Jesus calls the 12, and they drop their nets, they leave their families, and they follow him. Radical. When we hear those stories, we think, well, how can that be? And how am I going to react to that? And today in the gospel, someone walks up to Jesus and says, I will follow you wherever you go, but let me first bury my father. And Jesus says, let the dead bury their dead. You come away and proclaim the kingdom. It almost sounds cruel, doesn't it? And to another one, he says, anyone who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not worthy of the kingdom. So we're talking about radical separation here. We're talking about some kind of recognition that happens in every faithful person, and we often use the term conversion for this. This insight, let's say, that motivates us to go on a journey with God outward, transcending what we have been before, opening our hearts and our minds to the possibilities that God is presenting to us, and those possibilities are endless. But you first have to say goodbye to what you were before. There's something about the Christian life that is always about leaving, about recognizing that this is not my eternal home. America will pass away. The human families that we know, they're all going to pass away. So when Jesus says, leave your father and mother, leave your family, it sounds like that's a horrible thing to say. It's a horrible thing to do. But somehow or other, our family transcends our earthly family. It's bigger than that. In fact, it's infinite. So we have ways of ritualizing that in the church. And two of the most profound ways, I think, are baptism and Eucharist. In baptism, in the 4th and 5th centuries when they began the catechumenate, they baptized in a very radical way. A person who was going to be baptized took off all their clothes, and their clothes were burned, because when someone dies, you burn their clothes. This old person is going to die. And so they go naked into the pool, and on the other side, they're given new clothes, which is the baptismal garment. And they have left the old world of darkness and sin, where they were wrapped in error, as the opening prayer to today's Mass suggests. And then they stand in the bright light of truth, and they're given a candle to symbolize that. So we still celebrate with that same basic ritual. It's not done in the nude, and it's not done in a separate building for privacy's sake. It's all done out in the open, but the ritual hasn't changed all that much, and the words are pretty much the same as they were in the fourth century. Put on the armor of light. So the other sacrament is Eucharist, and Eucharist is a separation just as much. It's a dying. We memorialize, we remember that Christ died for our salvation and that we are invited to join in his paschal mystery. Trusting in the resurrection, we lay our lives on the altar along with him, and there has to be something of dying to self that's going on here. Because the only way you get to the kingdom is dying to what is here and now. It's all about the future. It's all about the endless possibility. It's all about letting go of what I have designed and allowing grace, allowing God to design me. It's a lot about what we call the second half of life. After you have spent years and energy and money and time building yourself up to who you are, but you reach a certain stage in life where you realize it's all kind of nothing. It doesn't really matter. And when you realize that, there's a loss, there's a dying that happens there. But then there's a resurrection, and the resurrection is the freedom that that gives. When all of a sudden I realize that I don't have to hang on to this, that it doesn't matter. Because God is holding out an eternal future for me that is far beyond anything that I could invent. And so in my mind, I'm always inventing myself. I'm always imagining what I am, what I could be. Why would I think that I could create a me better than the one God is creating? God is constantly creating a new me. And I want to open myself to that. But the only way to be open to that is to die to this. So that's why Jesus is always saying to his disciples, the only way to gain your life is to lose your life. The only way to be first is to be last. The only way to have it is to let go of it. Losing is winning. Dying is rising. This is a great truth that Christianity has been telling us for 2,000 years. And the Bible has these wonderful exaggerated stories. We have these exaggerated sacraments that are about death and resurrection. And we just have to give over ourselves to that. Let it wash over us. Let it happen. Stop resisting it. Stop clinging to what I have so that God can give me everything.